Hesado, 23rd of February, Rabbi Daniel Rowe, Oyrov Simcha.
So, let's set up the time parsha theme. I'm not sure why I've said I'm going to speak about Purim, but I guess it's linked to Parsha Zocha anyway, so if we have time, maybe we'll link something back to the parsha. But first of all, just where's the clock? Just keep track. Okay. First of all, yeah, it's interesting that when if you look by the end of the Megillah, by the end of the whole Purim story, it's very clear that there's been enormous transformation of Klal Yisrael. Enormous, right? We say Kimu Masha Kiblu, right? It says that Kimu Kiblu Aleim Baal Zarom, the Jews established and accepted upon themselves, and the Gemara Chazal pick up on the apparently superfluous term and say it means Kimu Masha Kiblu Kva. They established what they'd already accepted. What's the story? So we know the Gemara in Shabbos says that originally when the Torah is given, so it talks about Yisrael being Tachti Sahar, at the foot of the mountain, it literally means under the mountain, and therefore the Gemara says there's a hint at Kof Aleim Harkigigis, as if Hashem either literally or metaphorically on some level suspended this har, this mountain over them, says, if you don't accept the Torah, Shantek Vuraskam, this is going to be the end. So Lefi the Maharal, that means it was so overwhelming, it was so compelling, there was no choice. Either way, it means there's no choice. And then the Gemara says, well, Imkein Mudar Abelo, right? So that's the case. We have the greatest get-out clause of ever being held to the Torah standards. No, not to worry, because Alpha Pichein Hodekib Lub Mechashverish, even so, they reconnected, recommitted in the days of Achashverosh before entering for Bayis Sheni. We recommitted at a level that becomes absolutely binding even for later phases in history. So something happens in the story of Purim that really connects us to receiving Torah. It connects us to everything we are going to do in the Golos. Lefi the Ramban, it's not even so obvious why exactly what the chiyuv of keeping Torah outside of Eretz Yisrael even is, but once we have Kimu Kibla Yehud, and once we've accepted it, this is it. We're completely committed. So something changes in the Purim story that is very significant and dramatic to solve a problem that had existed long before the Purim story. And you'll see also, if you look carefully, I'll just give you the other example, which is the title we're given today, the Oyer of a Simcha. La Yehudim Ayesa Oyer of a Simcha V'sasin V'yakar and Chazal Adoyrash. What does it mean that the Jews had light and joy and elation and value or preciousness? And each one corresponds to specific area of mitzvah. Oyer, light is Torah. Now mitzvah Torah, right? So they had Torah. And Simcha is Yom Tov. And Sasin is Bris Milos, and Yakar is Tefillin, and so forth. So, now, what that means is, Chazal is saying, when it says that the Jews had, had light and joy and elation and preciousness, it means they were keeping mitzvahs. There was a recommitment to Torah and mitzvahs. But now here's the obvious question. So why didn't the Megillah just say, Lehu demaisa Torah, for Yom Tov, for Mila, for Tefillin? What's so hard to say those words? Why do you have to say it in riddles?
Too simple.
Too simple, that's it. So there's a great klal, which is whenever you have Ein Mekriyot Simdei Pshuto and you have a drush, so always what's niskala, the Ravan Kotler says this klal, it goes back much further, but whenever something is revealed in the explicit text of Pshuto Shel Mikra, that's what would be revealed in the world. Whenever something is there but hidden beneath the surface, you have to listen carefully to pull it out. It means you have to listen carefully to pull it out in the world as well. Normally speaking, your standard experience of things is you consciously are learning Torah, and hopefully between the lines you pick up some Oira, some enlightenment. You consciously are focusing on keeping Yom Tov, and between the lines you pick up some Simcha, some joy. You're consciously focusing on commitment to Hashem's mitzvahs and bris milah, the bris with Hashem, and you experience some elation. In other words, the primary experience, the pshat, if you like, is normally the kiyum of Torah and mitzvahs, and the second, the sort of subkon seeping up beneath the surface, is Oira and Simcha. La Yehudim in Shushan, it was the opposite. The conscious, direct experience. If you asked, what are you doing? They would say, I'm getting Oira, I'm being enlightened. How are you doing it? Oh, I'm learning a Sefer. If you ask, what are you doing? I'm keeping simple, I'm just doing joy. You'd have to dig beneath the surface to actually discover this, the Shemiras Halacha. In other words, if you like, the Pnimius, the inner experience of the connection to Hashem had become primary. It was direct. How you got there was, of course, you have to keep all the Torah, the mitzvahs, and the halachos, but this is what's happening. In other words, everything has turned around. So the inner has become the outer, and the experience of Oyer and Simcha is the actual conscious Pshat experience. And how all this is achieved in the Megillah is the real question. How do we achieve this complete transformation that creates a deepening of our commitment to Torah and mitzvahs, that creates a deepening of our experience of Torah and mitzvahs? That is all happening in the Megillah. And really, if you look carefully at the Megillah, for the biggest transformation that takes place, of course, a good klal, when you learn any Sefer of Tanakh, is see how it begins and how it ends. How it begins and how it ends will give you an indicator of what is really going on in the Sefer. Rus begins with Shoftim and ends with David, with Melech, and they're going to be the ultimate Melech of Yisrael, and so forth. So you know that's what's really going on, and how the rest of the story fits that you've got to work out, etc. So the Megillah begins with Achashverosh and ends with Achashverosh. Begins with Achashverosh, who's trying to make a Suda Lasos Kirtonish Vish to please everybody. It begins with Achashverosh, who's inept at ruling, who's simply incapable of ruling. It begins with Achashverosh, who's just trying to convince himself there's going to be no Beis HaMikdash or whatever exactly is going on. And in fact, when it describes the elaborate, ornate nature of the party, the six-month party in the final week at the end for all the people of Shushan, when it does all that, it describes, amongst the description, sort of the final description, is the marvelous Dar v'Seichores. The Gemara says that's also a play on words. Dar is drawer, it's liberation, and Seichores is Seichores, markets. Liberating the markets, freeing legislation, cutting taxes. Now that's all pretty good in a modern liberal state. In an ancient empire, that was a pretty weak thing to do. In fact, everything he does is letting go of the power of what was once about the Malchus Bavel. Rav Yonason's Pesach, his introduction to the whole Megillah, both in the Medrash and in the Gemara, is all about how much we're undoing the power of Bavel. But one way or the other, he's a very weak leader. Lasses Kitzonish for Ish. He doesn't even make decisions by himself, right? Chen Dvar Melech was always, if Ne Yodid Das Vadin, he always consulted lawyers and PR teams and whatever before he did anything. And every time someone pressures him, he gives in and capitulates effectively. By the end of the Megillah, he's actually become a melech, right? The last chapter of the Megillah, which is not so obvious in the story what it's even doing, except maybe for the last pasuk. But Vayasa Melech Achashverosh Masala Oretz. So he actually imposes a tax, the Eayam, and on the islands, and every, he's inserting himself. All of the greatness of Achashverosh and the raising up of Mordechai Shegidla Melech. And even when it describes Mordechai Yehudi, it's Mishnah LeMelech Achashverosh, right? So something's happened in the Megillah to turn an inept, incapable, dysfunctional leader into a serious king. He's actually even spelled differently in the last parak of the Kriegsiv. For those who know a bit of Persian, it's really outside the point, but it is interesting. The Persian name is Machlekes in Chazal, which king Achashverosh was. But assuming it was, let's say it's Xerxes, so the Persian name is Hashirosh, close to how it's spelt in the last chapter, not the way it's spelt through the rest. This is all a side point, but it implies the real Malchus is happening right at the end. So Achashverosh is transforming in the Megillah. He's changing. And what is the key moment of change? It turns out that's Esther's job. It's an amazing thing. When Esther goes to see, so the Gemara asks, Esther, what was she doing? Why does she come in? You know, first of all, Mordechai has a plan. You should be boicha, you should be mischanen, you're right, you should be mischanen al amo, should beg for people, and Esther says it's a ridiculous plan. And Mordechai's response is not to come up with another plan, it's just to say you've got to do something. Right, you've got to do something. Try yourself in trouble, you've got to do something. And we'll get to in a minute to back to Mordechai's, what he says. But Esther, it seems, she says, fine, sumo alai, in that case we have to have everyone fasting for me, laila v'yoyim, etc. But then, when she goes to see the Melech, and she says, Yavah Melech for Haman, you know, can he come with Haman to the party I'm making? So the Gemara says, Maras Esther, what was she thinking? Why not just try to speak to Achashverosh and beg for Klal Yisrael? What's this whole elaborate thing? And the Gemara goes through, for generations they were arguing over this. all the way back in the Tanoim in Yavna, all the way through the Amoraim, suggesting different possibilities. Is it she wants to be sort of to be in control, right? The Maharal puts it, or is it that she's afraid that Ahasuerus changes his mind all the time, so she has to have Haman in the room? Is it that she wants to make Klal Yisrael scared? Is it she wants to show Hashem how desperate is, so he'll do a nace? Is it that there's just more, there's, I think, 10 different reasons given. And on Amoraim, and right at the end, we ask Eliyahu Navi, and he says it was all of them. Now, it's almost impossible to understand how it could be all of them. Some associate each other, right? Some are supposed to be natural, and how they're stimulating the supernatural. But when you say all of them, what you mean at a certain level is, I don't really have a plan. This might happen, or maybe this might happen, or maybe this might happen, or maybe this might happen. I'm not really sure. She's not quite sure. If I put these together, it could go this way, or this way, or this way, or this way. Something good will happen. To the point where, in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's very far from obvious what goes wrong, but she's not able to do anything the first time. It's not clear she ever planned the second. She's waiting for something to happen. It doesn't happen. In between, you have the Laila Ahu, and everything changes, and Haman comes in, Avel V'chofi Rosh, and he's convinced it's all going to go wrong, and she sees the moments, and she says, okay, right? I'm going to ask for us to be returned. But if you look at the key point, at the key moment when she does that, not right. What does she do? She does something quite remarkable. You see, what she does is she says, "Kinim karanani v'ami, we've been sold, etc." And then she says something really interesting. She says, "V'ilu la'avodim l'shvachas nimkarnu, if we'd have been sold as slaves, Hecharashti, I'd be quiet." Mordechai told her, "You can't be quiet." Right? If you're silent, you're out. But she says, "I would be silent if we'd have been sold as avodim and shvachis. If we'd have been sold into slavery, if we'd have enslaved us, I'd be quiet." Ki ein atzar shoyim ben azek hamelach, because this is not good for you, Achashverosh. Why is she saying that? You better beg for yourself. What are you talking? I want what's good for you. What is she going on about? And then he turns around and says, "Mi uzav eizer shemilit." Right? Who's this person who's fulfilled his mind to do such a thing? I've never heard of such a thing. What does she answer? A very strange sentence. She doesn't begin by saying it's Haman. She says, "Ish tzar v'oyev." Then she says, "Haman hara hazeh." And the Gemara says she's in fact looking at Achashverosh. She's staring him in the eyes. "You're the ish tzar v'oyev. You think you're going to tell me mi uzav eizer? I've seen the past shag and aksav. Mordechai has shown it to me. I know what happened over here. I know the whole story. How Haman came in. You gave him the ring, right? I know what happened here. Stop." Now, the Gemara says, a Malach quickly came and, you know, knocked and said, "Don't be silly," right? She looks at Haman and says, "Haman arazeh." But what's she thinking? What is she trying to do? That sounds like a crazy thing to do. Until you realize on the Pshuto Shel Mikra, again, without getting into all the levels of Oymek here, it's really, really crucial, because you see, up to that point in the story, Achashverosh has never dealt with reality. Achashverosh's entire world has been one great facade and illusion. In fact, every state of mind in the Megillah until that point that describes Achashverosh's state of mind is prefixed with the letter Ka. It's like he's comfortable on his throne. He's not comfortable on his throne. He's paranoid. When the Gemara gives, Chazal give different things, problems of what he had, that he's not comfortable. He never really thought he's a Melech. He's scared of everything. He's scared of everything. He's not sitting comfortably. Rashi, by the way, always says, you still have to learn Al-Pi Pshuto Shel Mikra. He says, Ka could be Kasher, obviously. It could be when. But you'll see it's always prefixed. The literal meaning is always like, Ka toim leva melech biyayin. It was like he was having a good time with the wine. He's not having a good time. Ka shoy chamas ha-melech. It was like he'd calmed down after Vashti. He'd never calmed down. He could pretend. He could finally pretend. Everything is Ka. And Esther comes in and says, Achashverosh, will you stop lying? Will you stop living in a world of illusion, delusion, facade? Can you just stop playing games? The whole thing was a game, right? Haman came in with a tina. Achashverosh doesn't answer one way or the other. He just takes up. You do what's good, you know, good for the Jews in your eyes. What do you think that means? I don't want to be blamed. I want to pretend. Stop playing games. Understand this is not even good for you. You've been busy destroying yourself while you're trying to destroy us. You've been busy. Can you just face reality and watch what Achashverosh does? What does he do? For the first time in the Megillah, he gets up and walks out by himself. This is the first decision he's going to make by himself. not consulting the Eidei Itzim, not consulting the Eidei Dasvadin, not doing it, he's going to get up and walk out by himself. And then the Gemara says, the Malachim come along, dressed as Team Homon, wiping out the Ginas HaMelech. But that now, he's not right to see Malachim, right? He sees the Giloy in the world that he suddenly realizes everything Homon's been doing to him has been destroying him. He's just been living in these bubbles and these games and this fear. And what does he do? He walks back in. And when, as soon as he says he kills Homon, Tlu Olav, V'chamas HaMelech Shechocho, he actually has a real emotion. He actually calms down. And straight after that, Esther can bring Mordechai in. Gigidol Esther Mahula. Esther can say exactly what Mordechai is to her. Right? Everything. Raised me as a child, married according to strong shit in Chazala. He's everything. He couldn't have said that to Achashverosh 2 minutes earlier. He's petrified. He doesn't even. Yeah. This is what's happened. Achashverosh transforms in the Megillah. You know the Vilna Gaon has several pirushim of the Megillah. So the one that we don't have all of is the Derech HaRemez, and it's a big chaval al da'avdim. But he says every character in the Megillah plays a part of us, a part that we can recognize within ourselves. And Achashverosh is the Yetzer Hara. Haman and Memuchan, that's the Satan, and that's the Malach HaMavos. And the Satan and Malach HaMavos, the Satan has to be killed, but the Yetzer Hara doesn't have to be killed. The Yetzer has to be transformed. This is the God's message say in the Megillah, because he didn't get all the way to the end. But it's very clear, Achashverosh has to be transformed. He has to be changed. And what is the reason? Why is that the centerpiece of the whole Megillah? How does that link to everything? How does that even happen? Why is facing reality and not illusion so critical? And the Terence really is one of the biggest sides of the whole Megillah. The Maharal brings this several times in the story. Why everything has to go through Haman. Everything has to go through Haman. It's something I think we spoke about a few years ago here. Everything in the story goes through Haman. Every decision in the story is Haman. All the way till the end, we're facing the effects of the fact that he made it for Loyavar. He created this sense that decrees can't be repealed. So now we have to gather the militaries together to destroy all the Amalekites and so forth. So everything is Haman. Every decision made for the first, really into the sixth parak, every decision made is made by Haman. Killing Vashti, Memuchan is Haman, say Chazal. Right, and therefore it will be given, the Malchus will be given, L'Ru'usa Tova M'mena. By the way, I have to say this will link back to the Shabbos. Have you ever noticed an amazing thing, how the Megillah constantly hints back to the whole story of Sha'ul and Agag? Right? We don't call Haman the Amaleki, we call him the Agagi. Mordechai is Ben Yoy Ben Shimi Ben Kish, Sha'ul HaMelech's father, right? This is, we're always linking back, but the most powerful line is when Memuchan says, we'll give the Malchus L'Ru'usa Tova M'mena to a colleague who's better than her, who ends up being Esther. So that line is an exact parallel with the grammar appropriately adjusted to the line that is going to be said, read on Shabbos, to Sha'ul HaMelech, how he's going to lose his Malchus and it'll be given L'Re'acha Tova M'mekom to your colleague who's better than you. It's the same line. The line that Sha'ul HaMelech loses his Malchus for failing to kill Agag, is the exact same line that his great-great-granddaughter is going to have the Malchus return to her to go and finish off the descendant of Agag. And the person who's going to bring her back in is going to be Haman himself. It's the exact same line. Amazing. And Haman makes all the decisions. He makes that decision. He makes the decision to change the constitution of Persia Media. He makes to make it the decrees irrevocable. He makes the decree to kill Klal Yisrael. He even decides how to reward Mordechai. And the yisoid of that is a yisoid that is, the Sifrei Chaim brings it as the yisoid of Ein Ed Milvadoi. The yisoid is this. You see, the amazing thing about the Megillah is we're so used to being at the end of it that we forget what it was like to be in the middle. We forget what it's like to be in the third and fourth prokim of the Megillah. Evel God La Yehudim, right? Everywhere that Tzoyim B'chir, Mis Sakva Efer, Yutzal Arabim, they're distributing masses, sackcloth and ashes. Everybody's crying. We forget how tragic the middle of the Megillah looked. On that day of Yud Gimel or Yud Dalad of Nissan, when the letters go up, L'Hashem L'Haragul Abed, or according to the Malbim, those letters were concealed. It was just, there was a big poster saying, Liyo Yisasidim Liyo Mazat, to be ready for this day, but everybody knew it was sitting in the letters. Everyone knew what's going on. So you're a Jew in a village somewhere, and you get this letter, and you think, right, let's send a message to the nearby village. Can we run there? No, they got the same one. You send messages all right. Everywhere's got the same problem. okay, can we train militarily? No, 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 the Persian Empire is going to come. Well, he sticks and stones against tanks and an air force, or whatever they used in those days, right? So let's daven, right, ask the Nevi'im, can we have a nace? There's going to be no nace. The name Hashem's not niggled, it's not revealed in the Megillah, which means it was not going to be revealed in the story. No Nevuah, no nace, no nothing. There's no possible, it's not even possible that there's a solution. That's how tragic the Megillah story was in the middle. They were misspayed, they were doing hespeding already. I mean, this is it. They're already doing Avelos because nothing can happen. They're Mevatal Seder night, according to many shittas, and the Poshup Shat in the story. Laila v'yoyim. That means no Arbakoisus, no Matzah, no Moror. There's no Gilui of the Nisim of Seder night. There's no Gilui of these things. This is absolutely, it's over. And there's no possible solution. They don't know the queen's Jewish, but even if she is, she can't get to the king. And even if she could, he can't repeal his own decree. It's not possible. And the incredible thing is, the next day they wake up, and there's Haman. Toloi, on an 8th Gavur HaMishim Amo. There he's hanging. In those days it was even worse. They didn't actually hang you from a noose. They impaled. There is a shit of Rishonim, maybe not, but that's generally how it was done then. But either way, he's hanging from an 8th Gavur HaMishim Amo. And what has happened? They wake up and ask, how was that possible that could have happened? And the Teretz is that he committed the only possible crime he could commit, which was treason. There was only one crime left for him when he's got the tabas. And that's, of course, the most, the Chazal say this, one of the Akdomas in the Medrash in the Esther Rabbah, that there's more shuvah done as a result of that Hasaras HaTabas, that handing over the ring of law, than all the Divrei Nevi'im. And that source of the Bas, we know the remez when the Rabbi Shalom is running something in the Megillah is when it doesn't say Melech HaChashresh, but HaMelech. And it's Vayosa HaMelech as Tabata, the king, as if Hashem himself, not as if, is giving the reins of history to Haman. So how's it possible he's dead? And the answer is, there's only one possible way he died. There's only one thing he could do that was wrong, and that was treason. And he managed to do it. He didn't realize the queen's Jewish, but he managed to make a decree to kill her. And how did a Jewish queen get in the first place? Because he said the line, "Le'ru'usa yitena malchus le'ru'usa tov memenah." It was Haman who got her in there. And so every tool that Haman generated ended up conspiring to destroy him. So Sifsei Chaim, that's a gilui, that's a much more powerful gilui revelation than any other revelation that we have. This is a revelation of Ein Odom Vada, that even Ra is in the end Megala Tov. In the short run, the Ramchal has a whole arichas on this, not directly linked to Purim, in the Sefer Das Tavunas, that the longer, the more evil something looks, and when it reveals that in the end it destroys itself and reveals Hashem, then it reveals there's nothing but Hashem. Ein Oid Mavadu. This is something we spoke about here a few years ago, and this is why, of course, this is why La'asid Lover, there'll come a time, say Chazal, when we won't anymore have Sforim of Tanakh, we'll have Chumash Chumshi Torah, and Megillas Esther. Because Esther is the gilui of what things are going to be like in Olam Haba. Of what the world will look like after Yom HaMashiach and Olam Haba. How the world will look when you see that everything is the Devar Hashem. This is why we say that Lost in Love, that again, I see the Namodos Le'Batel, we'll lose all the Yom Tovim at some point. We're talking very, very far at high levels here, but we'll keep Yom Kippur and Purim. But this is what's happening, and the aside of this, therefore, is the following. The mistake people can make from this is, okay, so I get to Purim, and of course, this is the Oymek of Adel Yoda Ben Araham Levarach Mordechai. I don't know the difference, because on some incredibly deep level, if one does the pathway of Mordechai and gets Nisparach, gets blessed, then there's a Gilui of Hashem. And if one takes the pathway of Mordechai and gets if one takes the pathway of Haman and gets the Oro and gets cursed, then Hashem is Niskala. Whichever pathway anyone chooses, there's Adel Yoda. So Shlos says Adel Yoda Bechlal, etc. But that's where you've got to get to. That's the Madrega of Purim. But the mistake a person can make is, therefore, what difference does it make? Whatever I do, the Gilui Hashem happens. And the Teretz is, that's exactly wrong. That's exactly the opposite lesson to learn. Because what does Mordechai say to Esther? It seems like a stira. We'll be saved anyway. That sounds like the worst possible speech you could ever give anybody. Right? It does. You'd say, Esther, if you stay silent now, Klal Yisrael will be destroyed. and world history could come to an end. This could be catastrophic. Instead, he says, no, if you stay silent, we'll all be saved. So you could just hear us say, okay, so let me, I'll sit and say to him, and send someone else. But you and your ancestral home will be obliterated. And of course, that goes back to Shaul HaMelech. We created this problem ancestrally over here, right? We got to solve it. It's even a sophic. I don't know if this is why he became a man. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So Terence is, of course, like this. This is exactly the Gilui of Einoid Mavadoi. You see, if everything has to work through Nisim, Giluyim, if everything had to work through revealed miracles, that means history could essentially fail. All of our choices could go wrong, and we'd be saved anyway. Something would happen, which means that all of our actions have no meaning whatsoever. But the real Gilui, the deep, what the Ramchal calls Anhogas HaYichud, the real thing is a deeply driving history. Is something such that all the choices we make, all the events that happen, will lead directly to the Gilui of Mashiach, will lead directly to the Olam Haba, will lead directly to that. And that will mean that history is being co-authored by us and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, such that every choice we ever make is going to be embedded and written into that final chapter. That's what it means. The fact that Revach Hatzalah Lamed Le'ehudim M'Mokem Acha, the fact that the sum total of choices of history will work, means every choice is now part of a sefer that's being written. And every choice will have a meaning when we get to the end. You think you do something good that makes no difference to anybody anywhere. Right? In a room somewhere, you battle against chaos, or you make a decision to do a mitzvah where nobody knows. So we know, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam knows, kol ma'aseh sefer nechtovim, everything's written in a sefer, and we normally understand, that means in Shamayim, we get rewarded for it. And there is obviously that, we do the Nefesh HaChaim, how everything shapes Olamas and Olmei Olamas and so forth. But down here as well, it's the Sefer Nechtovim, and that Sefer is the end of history. And that Sefer will have everything in it. Because when you get to the final chapter, you'll suddenly learn the meaning of all the other ones before, like the Megillah itself. And when we learn the meaning of all the ones before, we'll suddenly understand something I did which I thought had no impact on anybody. I thought I was just controlling my anger. And I walked into a room and I didn't realize I had a smile on my face. And I didn't realize that I made 10 other people feel happy. And I didn't realize they made 10 other people feel happy. And I didn't realize by 3 hours later there were thousands of people in the world in a better state of mind. And the consequence of that, which I never even knew about, was someone somewhere, I don't know, a shidduch happened or this happened. So things you can't even imagine and rippled across the by the end. That's your Moshe Mashiach. And Chazal says that all the time, how many things in Tanakh are written that you would have thought were insignificant at the time? If Reuven would have known what he'd have done, if Aaron would have known that he's coming to Moshe and it would be written for Rav Samach Beliboy, he'd be happy in his heart, he'd have done music. If Boaz would have known that it's going to be written that he gave a bunch of grains to Ruth, he'd have given her gold. Because we'd have thought, Boaz, we'd have written a book about him, we'd have written about his nevuahs. We'd have written about the Milchamas. We'd have written about the judges' judgments. We'd never written that he once passed the girls and made her feel nice in the field. And Chazal are teaching that brings Mashiach. Every act, of course, that does. As a result of that, they get married. As a result of that, David HaMelech comes. That's what it means. Revach Hatzal Lamed Le'ehudim Mokem Acha. And therefore, you'd better get involved. You're right, the plan is ridiculous. Do a different plan. I don't know what you're meant to do. But you can't be sitting here in the middle of a history being written by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you're right in the palace, great-granddaughter Shaul HaMelech created this problem, and you do nothing? That's the power of this. Once you understand the Ein Od Milvadoi, once you understand the Rebbeinu Shel Olam running the world, you don't need a plan. You don't need to understand everything. You just need to know what you need to do right now. What you need to do right now is the best thing you could possibly do right now. And that's it. It might not work. It might not work. In the end, it will work. You know, it's an amazing thing. After that perek, when Haman takes Mordechai all around town, and look at the different reactions. Mordechai, who's Klal Yisrael, who believes everything in the world is meaningful, goes straight back to the Shah Melech, as if nothing happened. Haman, who believes everything is meaningless, has got it all figured out. Zeresh has said, in Mizrahi, who's in this? Hey, you're a monarch, you believe everything's meaningless. How did you get a plan here? And Mordechai's gone back to Shah Melech. Terence is exactly this. If you believe everything in the world is part of a grand plan, you don't need to interpret it. You need to know you've got to try and do your best. It will work, it will work, it won't work, it won't work. You know what's right right now. You know what Torah needs, you know what mitzvah needs, that's all. You understand your choice is infinitely significant and it will ripple across history in ways you can't begin to understand. if you think the world has no meaning, you've got to try and work out what's going on. So you'll always impose your own little stories on it. And of course, it was very good that Hamon did, because he walked in short and off all too well. He's sure he's going to fail, and therefore he did. It's one of those amazing things about the Megillah. Why didn't he give a good answer? Why didn't he just say, I didn't realize she's Jewish? Why didn't he say something? Why didn't he argue? Why didn't he go out with Achashverosh and try and persuade him like he's been able to do the whole Megillah? Mistama, because he thought he was going to fail anyway. He's interpreting. This is an amazing thing. You do not need to know what you're doing or what impact it has. You need to know right now mitzvahs needed, you do it. Right now avodas tzibbos needed, you do it. It might work, it might not work. It doesn't matter. And your act will also be in history, even if you're killed at the gates. Esther, you got to do something. The power of understanding Einod Movadoi is the power of understanding the infinite significance of every single one of us and every single one of our choices. That's its power. And when that happens, there's no need to play games, there's no need to fear, and there's no need to hide. And so long as people are playing games and fearing and hiding, trying to control the little world around them because they're so scared of it, there's no real way to allow in the betochen of allowing in the Einod Movadoi. And therefore, Esther has to say to Achashverosh, we need to stop the games, and we need to stop all of this, realize what Ish Tzar V'Oyev means, stop playing games, walk out by yourself, and deal with something for real, because you don't realize Einan Sashayv Benezek and Melechamish, you're destroying yourself. And when that can change, then everything can change. And when that changes, then we understand Kimu V'Kibla Yehudim. It's not a matter of we're doing it because of this or the Sar or the Oynisha. It's just a Kabbalah. It's just I understand the power of every mitzvah I do. There just becomes a desire to be Mekayim. Kimu Mashe Kibla Kvar. This is it. We're going to do it. And Torah becomes Oira. Yom Tov becomes Simcha. The Bris with Hashem becomes Sase. The Tefillin become Yekar. And everything changes. And that's some of what Purim is Megala to us. And Be'ez Hashem, we should be Zoycha, Leid, Mois, Oira, Simcha, Sase, and Yekar. Kain Tihi, Elomim.
Hey. 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 Hey.